Hello, and welcome to Psych Ready, the revision podcast that gets you exam ready one topic at a time. I'm your host, and today we are diving deep into one of the most fascinating and most heavily examined topics in OCR GCSE psychology, social influence. Whether you're revising for the first time or doing a final polish before your exam, this episode has everything you need. We'll cover the core concepts, walk through the key studies, tackle exam technique, and finish with a quick-fire quiz to test your recall. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get started. What is social influence? Let's begin with the big picture. Social influence is about how other people affect our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And here's why it matters, not just for your exam, but for real life. Have you ever gone along with a group decision you didn't fully agree with? Or done something because a teacher or parent told you to, even if you weren't sure it was right? That's social influence in action. For your OCR exam, you need to understand three distinct types: conformity, obedience, and crowd behavior. And the number one mistake candidates make, and I mean the single most common error examiners report, is confusing conformity with obedience. So let's nail the difference right now. Conformity is majority influence. It happens when a person changes their behavior or beliefs to match those of a group. And crucially, there's no direct order. Nobody tells you to conform. You just go along with it. The key study here is Ash from 1955. Obedience, on the other hand, involves a direct instruction from an authority figure. Someone with perceived power tells you to do something and you comply. The key study here is Milgram from 1963. Think of it this way. Conformity is peer pressure from equals. Obedience is following orders from above. Keep that distinction crystal clear in your mind. Now let's go deeper on conformity. Solomon Ash wanted to know, would people go along with an obviously wrong answer if a group said it was right? His method was elegant. He recruited male American university students and told them they were taking part in a vision test. Each participant sat in a room with what they thought were other participants. But these others were actually Confederates, actors working for Ash. They were shown a standard line and three comparison lines labeled A, B, and C. The task was simple. Which comparison line matches the standard line? One answer was obviously correct. On the critical trials, the ones that mattered, the Confederates all gave the same wrong answer. What would the real participant do? Here are the results you absolutely must memorize. On critical trials, participants gave the wrong answer, the same wrong answer as the Confederates, 36.8% of the time. That's more than a third of responses conforming to an obviously incorrect majority. And 75% of participants conformed at least once. Now, why did they conform? Ash interviewed participants afterwards and found two main reasons. Some conformed because they genuinely started to doubt their own perception. They thought, maybe I'm wrong. The group must be right. This is called informational social influence, or ISIs. They wanted to be correct. Others knew the group was wrong, but went along anyway to avoid standing out or being ridiculed. This is normative social influence, or NSI. They wanted to be liked and accepted. Remember this. NSI equals wanting to be nice and fit in. ISI equals wanting to be informed and correct. That's your memory hook right there. Ash also ran variations. When he introduced a dissenter, just one Confederate who gave the correct answer, conformity dropped dramatically from 36.8% to just 5.5%. This shows that unanimity is key. If the majority isn't unanimous, its power weakens significantly. When evaluating Ash, you need to use the GRAVE framework. That stands for generalizability, reliability, application, validity, and ethics. On generalizability, Ash used only male American university students. This is an androcentric and ethnocentric sample. Results may not apply to women or to people from collectivist cultures where conformity norms differ. On validity, the task was artificial. Judging line lengths is not something we do in real life, so the ecological validity is low. On ethics, participants were deceived about the true nature of the study. They were told it was a vision test. This raises concerns about informed consent and the right to withdraw. Now let's turn to Stanley Milgram and one of the most controversial studies in the history of psychology. Milgram's question was stark. How far would ordinary people go in obeying an authority figure, even if it meant harming another person? His study was conducted in the aftermath of the Holocaust, and Milgram wanted to understand how ordinary people could commit atrocities under orders. Here's the procedure. Participants, 40 male volunteers, aged 20 to 50, were recruited through newspaper advertisements for a study on memory and learning at Yale University. Each participant was assigned the role of teacher. They were introduced to a learner, actually a Confederate, who was strapped to a chair in an adjacent room. The teacher's job was to administer electric shocks every time the learner gave a wrong answer, increasing the voltage by 15 volts each time from 15 volts up to a maximum of 450 volts. The shock generator was labeled with descriptions ranging from slight shock at the low end to danger, severe shock, and at the very top, an ominous triple X. The learner was never actually shocked, but the participant didn't know that. As the shocks increased, the learner, heard through a wall, would bang, protest, and eventually go silent. If the participant hesitated, the experimenter, a stern figure in a gray lab coat, would deliver one of four standardized prods. Please continue. The experiment requires that you continue. It is absolutely essential that you continue. And you have no other choice, you must go on. The results were shocking, in every sense. 65% of participants, that's 26 out of 40, continued to the maximum 450 volts. Every single participant went to at least 300 volts. Milgram explained this through the concept of the agentic state. When we are in the presence of a legitimate authority figure, we shift from an autonomous state, where we act on our own conscience, to an agentic state, where we see ourselves as agents carrying out someone else's wishes. In this state, we feel less personally responsible for our actions. Milgram also identified factors that increased or decreased obedience. When the experiment was moved from Yale University to a rundown office building, obedience dropped to 47.5%, showing the importance of legitimate authority and prestige. When the teacher had to physically hold the learner's hand on the shock plate, obedience dropped to 30%. Proximity to the victim matters. When two other teachers who were Confederates refused to continue, obedience dropped to just 10%. Social support reduces obedience. Our third key study shifts the focus to helping behavior in crowds. Pilyavin, Rodin, and Pilyavin conducted a field experiment on the New York subway in 1969. Their aim was to investigate bystander behavior, specifically what factors affect whether people help a stranger in need. The procedure involved a Confederate collapsing on a subway carriage between stations. The victim was either carrying a cane, appearing to be ill, or smelling of alcohol and carrying a bottle in a paper bag, appearing to be drunk. Observers recorded how quickly passengers helped and who helped. The results were striking. In the cane condition, help was offered in 95% of trials, usually within 70 seconds. In the drunk condition, help was offered in only 50% of trials, and it took much longer. Pilyavin explained this using the arousal cost-reward model. When we see someone in need, we experience arousal, an unpleasant emotional state. We are motivated to reduce this arousal. Whether we help depends on a cost-reward calculation. What are the costs of helping versus the rewards, and what are the costs of not helping? A critical distinction for your exam. Do not conflate Pilyavin's findings with bystander apathy as described by Latane and Darley. Pilyavin's subway study actually challenges the idea that crowds always reduce helping. In the right conditions, they can increase it. Now let's talk about how to turn this knowledge into marks. First, command words. When a question says describe, you need to give two developed features with supporting detail. Don't evaluate, just describe. When it says explain, you need to give reasons and show causation. When it says evaluate, you need to use grave and explain the implication of each point. Don't just say it was unethical, say participants were deceived, which means they could not give fully informed consent, undermining the study's ethical integrity. Second, the 13-mark question. This is your extended response, and you should allocate 15 to 20 minutes to it. The mark scheme rewards a logical chain of reasoning, AO1 description linked immediately to AO3 evaluation. Use grave as your structure. For every evaluation point, state the issue, explain why it's a problem, and link it back to the study's conclusions. Third, application questions. If the question gives you a scenario, say a character called Jamie who goes along with his friends even though he thinks they're wrong, you must explicitly reference Jamie and his specific behavior. Generic theory without application to the scenario will not access the higher mark bands. Fourth, the most common mistakes. Number one, confusing conformity and obedience. Conformity is peer pressure, no direct order. Obedience involves a direct instruction from an authority figure. Number two, describing procedure when asked for results. If a question asks what Milgram found, give the results. 65% obeyed to 450 volts, not a description of the shock generator. Number 3, vague ethics. Never just say it was unethical. Name the specific guideline breached and explain its impact. Quickfire recall quiz time. I'll ask a question, give you a few seconds to think, then give the answer. Question 1. What percentage of participants in ASH's study conformed on critical trials? Think. The answer is 36.8%. Question 2. What percentage of Milgram's participants obeyed to the maximum 450 volts? Think. The answer is 65%. Question 3. What is the difference between NSI and IC? Think. NSI is conforming to be liked, normative, social approval. ISI is conforming to be right, informational, seeking correct information. Question 4. In Pilyavin's cane condition, what percentage of bystanders helped? Think, 95%. Question 5. What is the agentic state? Think, the state in which a person sees themselves as an agent of an authority figure, feeling reduced personal responsibility for their actions. Question 6. What happened to conformity in Ash's study when a dissenter was introduced? Think. Conformity dropped from 36.8% to just 5.5%. How did you do? If you got all 6, brilliant, you're in great shape. If you missed any, go back and review that section before your exam. Let's wrap up with the key takeaways. Social influence covers 3 main areas: conformity, obedience, and crowd behavior. The 3 key studies are Ash 1955, Milgram 1963, and Pilyavin et al. 1969. Conformity involves majority influence with no direct order, driven by NSI or ISI. Obedience involves a direct instruction from an authority figure, explained by the agentic state. Crowd behavior is explained by the arousal cost-reward model, not just diffusion of responsibility. For your exam, always distinguish conformity from obedience. Always name specific ethical guidelines when evaluating. Always apply theory to scenario characters by name, and always explain the implication of evaluation points rather than just listing them. You've got this. Social influence is a topic that rewards precise knowledge and clear thinking, and you've just done both. Keep revising, keep testing yourself, and I'll see you in the next episode of Psych Ready. Good luck!